Chapter 4. Bastion 8, Myrak Salient. Bastion 8 was a rock-rigged star, sunk into a dry moat 50 yards wide, the largest of a string of ancient defences that ringed the highlands, excavated with atomic bunkers, barracks, ration stores and munitions depots, and stoutly fortified in three stepped levels, each one offering enfilading fields of fire in all directions. It was from there that General Gruber launched his counterattack. He rode in a baneblade named High Lord, a magnificent brass-worked masterpiece with four lascannon sponsons and a raised cupola throne. It trundled forward, Cadians raising their lasguns in salute. They passed over the trench systems and pushed forward through the detritus of war, chasing the front line as it pushed deeper and deeper into the guts of the heretic army. The High Lord ripped through the trench systems of the four, its main guns pummeling any armoured resistance, while sponsons tore the combat's dim-induced fighters apart with heavy bolt shells as long as a man's hand. The vast tracks barely noticed the tank traps and trench systems that had been worked with so much care by the enemy. The baneblade crossed six lines of trenches. At midday on the first day of the assault, an improvised column of Black Legion tanks was thrown against it. They came rumbling forward across the burned, open moorland, black banners flapping in the smoke-dark air. The baneblade smashed through craters and piles of wreckage. It took four gunners to man the baneblade's main cannon. They assessed the danger, pinpointed a vanquisher at the back of the column, and swung the turret round. It took them only a few seconds to line up the tank and fire. The baneblade shell tore a hole in the armour of the Leman Russ wide enough for a man to climb through. Its explosion ripped the tank into shrapnel. On the foredeck of the baneblade, the demolisher cannon targeted the closest of the enemy tanks and fired a rocket-propelled siege round at it. When the smoke cleared, there was nothing left of tank or shell but a smouldering crater and a few scraps of burning metal. All units were pushing forward. It was as if the crack had opened into a vast dam. The torrent was too fast and too powerful, the head of water too great to be held back. The gap opened wider, until Cadian units were pushing forward on a 16-mile front with infantry and supply craft coming up behind them. All the time, their massed artillery regiments were hammering the enemy backlines, preventing them bringing up reinforcements or even mounting an effective response. Gruber sat on the throne, sword drawn. His attendants begged for him to come down and protect himself. Gruber was stern. "Who dares to stand against us?" Across much of the Myrak salient, the earth was pocked with craters, the vegetation scoured away or burned black with war. The prospect was one the Cadians were familiar with as they moved forward by foot or in armoured transports. Captain Lation's 114th Cadians made rapid progress, defeating three small tank forces that had been sent to halt him. The first two were units of heretic guardsmen manning captured tanks and armoured transports. They were easy prey for the elite Cadian units, their ruins left burning as the Cadians pushed on. But the third was a pair of Black Legion Predator tanks that fought a desperate and effective battle, sniping, falling back, and sniping once more. Lation lost three Leman Russ tanks and sustained damage to two more before his gunner managed to catch a Predator as it sped between the ruins, hitting it with a battle cannon round to the weak side armour. The Predator was lifted up by the explosion and slammed back to the ground, a broken and burning shell. A second tried to retreat between the rocks, speeding backwards, trailing smoke into the air. Lation had fought on the mist-bound moors of Mena and had a knack of guessing where a foe was heading. "Crack," he ordered, as the gunner dragged an armor-piercing round from the magazine, turned it and slid it onto the loading ramp.
"Loaded,"
the driver said, throwing the gun door shut and locking it closed. Lation elevated the gun barrel, adding another 50 feet to the shot. He made a quick prayer to the Golden Throne, then fired. The round arced off, leaving a swirling track as it plunged through the ink-black smoke. There was a pause as the cloud wound in upon itself, and then there was a sudden flash of flame that shot straight up into the air like a furnace blast. Lation led the column forward, checking that the second tank had been destroyed. The Predator had been hit on the turret, and the armor-piercing round had burned a neat hole through the reinforced plating and exploded within the tank, igniting the magazine. It was a hit that would have instantaneously killed an Imperial Guard crew, but one of the traitor space marines had survived, horribly wounded. Its legs had been blown away, and half its face had been burned down to the bone, but it was still alive. "Bring us close," Leshen ordered his driver. Leshen's tank stopped 20 feet away from the wounded space marine. Goldberg, his gunner, spoke.
"What should I load, sir?"
Leshen paused for a moment. "Nothing." The thing was huge, malformed, inhuman. Its eyes were yellow with vertical slits like a snake's. When its ruined mouth moved, Leshen knew there were words there, though it was an accent he could not understand. He slid down from his tank and landed on both feet.
"I do not fear you," he shouted.
He felt courage from his words. The thing snarled at him. The size of the traitor before him only became apparent as Leshen drew closer. Its chest was as wide as some men were tall. It was massive, solid, though terribly wounded, and still moving as it struggled for breath. Leshen drew his service-issue las pistol. He set the charge to the max, lifted the gun, and sighted the thing's forehead. This time, he understood the accent.
"Fire true, Captain."
Leshen felt sick at the sound of the thing's voice. His hand shook as it stared into him. The light of its eyes turned orange and then red, like a real fire burning.
"Shoot, Captain."
Leshen fired. The first shot hit the traitor on the side of the cheek. It scored a deep burn.
"Again,"
it hissed at him. Leshen's hand was shaking now. The next shot missed. He stepped forward for the third and held the pistol with both hands.
"In the name of the good Emperor of Mankind," he called out, and fired a third time.
Sallyports, Salvation 9983. It felt good to be driving again. Bendict stood in the turret of his tank and breathed a moment deep. But even as he led his column forward, he waited for his Vox officer to connect to General Gruber. Gruber's voice was tight and drawn.
"What is your strength?" he demanded.
Bendix knew the figure off by heart. He was leading 1,500 Lehman Russ tanks, assorted patents, 50 Hydra defense platforms, a squadron of assault tanks, 39 knights errant, 100,000 mechanized infantry, 10,000 Kazrakin. Bendix allowed himself a smile.
"We make up the 207th Army."
There was a long pause that Bendix enjoyed.
"You are sure of your numbers?"
Gruber's voice queried.
"All correct."
"What is your position?"
Bendix checked.
"Point 73. 207th Army is not on my list."
"We're new."
There was another long pause.
"That is impossible."
Bendix paused.
"Location confirmed, point 73. "You cannot be."
"We are, General Gruber."
Gruber's voice was curt.
"I said that is impossible. Please check and confirm immediately."
Bendix paused for a moment. He did not bother checking, but brought the Voxlink back up to his mouth.
"Confirmed, sir."
"You are 20 miles behind enemy lines."
"Confirmed."
"Lead your forces to cut off hostile army units."
"I'm afraid I cannot."
"What do you mean?"
"I have orders from the Lord Castellan Osaka E. Creed."
"And what are those orders?"
"I cannot tell you."
Gruber put on his officious voice.
"Major Bendix, you are addressing a general of the Astra Militarum."
Bendix let the moment hang and engaged the Voxstud.
"Yes, General Gruber. I am also a general. I have my own orders. I will be following those."
"Good hunting." A battalion of Volscani defended the pontoon bridges over the Myrak River. Behind them, in the far distance, the pylons of the Elysian fields rose up against the horizon. Bendix used a scope to assess their position. 3 Lehman Russes and a destroyer tank dug into the riverbanks. The heretic unit put up a commendable defence. Their infantry squads were dug into foxholes. Missiles arced out from them as the tanks fired at a furious rate. The 89th Army Group demolished them in less than 10 minutes, and Benedict led his army out over the Myrak River and past their burning wrecks, the Volscani troops lying dead. In 2 hours, his army had crossed to the other side. They paused to refuel, rearm, and regroup, and then they were off again, batting away 3 heretic forces that were flung at them. It was not until nightfall that they met serious opposition, a Black Legion column that had been diverted to impede their progress. The traitor Space Marines brought Benedict's army to a halt for nearly 2 hours as outflanking units enveloped them, and they slowly ground the Black Legion down. The battlefield was littered with burning wrecks. They belched black smoke into the gathering gloom. Benedict's tank was pushing cautiously through when Mia called up to him.
"Lord General," Mia said. "It's the Lord Castellan."
Benedict nodded as he took the voxlink and started to speak, but Creed cut him off.
"Benedict," he said, "where are you?"
"We've crossed the Myrak River."
"Good," Creed said. "Well done, but I need more. Can you reach the Elysian Fields by dawn?"
It was 50 miles.
"Confirmed," Benedict said. "We'll be there."
Creed's voice sounded strained and weary. Benedict could imagine him putting his fingers to his temples and rubbing them before he spoke.
"Thank you. Do all you can, please. You are the closest troops. Please do your best. Cadia depends on it."